Finds Brown on the left elbow. Mike McGurl right there on the catch. Off the tops, and he lobs, and McCormick throws it down. What a dunk by D-Mac off a beautiful feed from Thompson. Jayhawks get the ball into Latrell Jocelle. He brings it up the floor, and you can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win. A blowout in the Little Apple, 59-41.
Wow. Wow, yeah. I like that last one, like, really, wow. As in, that was really tough to watch. KU, K-State last night, KU wins 59-41. The shooting performances by both teams were really bad in the first half, and then K-State never got better. KU did get better, and KU then pulls away and wins. KU was right for the picking. I mean, the elements were all there. I mean, KU didn't play well. KU was turning the ball over. They couldn't hit threes. McCormick wasn't, they didn't get him going. They weren't, I mean, nobody was going for KU. I mean, it was there for K-State. I mean, even down 9 at halftime, it was still there for K-State. And they just refused to make a shot. Of course, I'm joking. They didn't refuse to make a shot. They have good shoot. They have a lot of shooters. They just don't make much. As Tim Fitzgerald said, we need some makers. And they kept chucking them, too. It's like, okay, I guess. It was a bad, bad night for K-State offensively. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a little bit. Plus the voice of Jayhawks, Brian Haney, with us. Coming up here at about 9:35. We're going to start where we weren't planning on starting, but this broke yesterday. Dusty's on top of it. We have a head football coach that is resigning.
Yeah, Rock Hills football coach Colby Hamill announced last night there on Twitter and Facebook and social media that he'd be resigning from his positions at the school, effective at the end of this school year. And along with being head football coach for the high school, he also held that position for junior high and head junior high boys basketball coach as well. And then, you know, it was his first head coaching gig at the high school level, a young guy, just really a few years out of college. And he went 9-8 in those two seasons with Rock Hills, 6-3 in 2019 in the first year, and then 2020 this past year, the Grizzlies were 3-5 overall. So that's the record for Colby there at Rock Hills. And again, he's decided to move on, and him and his family will look for a different opportunity. And I guess he kind of explains the reasoning for why he's leaving.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, just making the decision what's best for our family. You know, my wife and I have two little girls, and you know, thinking about their future and my wife and I's future as well is a huge factor. And that was, you know, just a decision that we had to make. And, you know, I look forward to, you know, see what happens down the road.
Yeah, he did indicate that he feels pretty confident that there'll be plenty of opportunities for him and his family to come, and feels pretty confident about the future. So as far as at Rock Hills, he also commented on kind of what he'll remember most and the work that the kids put in.
You know, I just felt like the growth was tremendous there from the day one when I got there, you know, until the last day I leave there this spring. You know, the amount of investment that these kids have put into the weight room in the summertime, going from, you know, 5 or 6 kids every day to last summer averaging almost 40 kids. And, you know, they've bought in, and they've really soaked it up. And I think that's something they're going to continue. And whoever comes in is going to have a group of kids that, you know, are willing to work hard. They're going to be coachable, and they're going to have a competitive nature to them. And, you know, I just, the growth has been crazy to watch as a coach, and you know, I'm not going to take any of that credit. These kids have worked tremendously hard, and you know, I appreciate everything they've done for me.
I was going to ask Colby Hamill, now soon to be former head coach, or I guess former now because football is not going on, so former head coach for Rock Hills High School football. And so as far as Rock Hills is concerned, they'll be looking, searching yet again for a new football coach, and we'll obviously follow that. And whenever we find anything new about that, hopefully we'll know fairly quickly and let you know who the new head coach will be for Rock Hills High School football.
All right, that story posted at KDCountry94.com, also NCKSSports.com as well. Tom Farr, Athlete of the Week.
Yes, Concordia senior Chase Parker has been named the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week. He had two big games for the Panthers and wins over Chapman and Beloit this past weekend. Went over Chapman on Friday. Parker registered a double-double with 24 of the team's 43 points and then had 11 rebounds. Also blocked 5 shots, went 11-15 from the floor in that one. Followed that up with an 18.8 rebound, 6-block shot performance and a 68-44 win over Beloit and Concordia on Saturday, and shot 7 of 10 from the floor, 4 of 6 from the free throw line in that victory. victory on Saturday. So on the season, Parker now averaging 11.5 points, 6 rebounds, 3.5 block shots, shooting 48% from the floor for the 8-8 Panthers. So again, congratulations to Concordia senior Chase Parker, the NCKSSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athlete of the Week.
All right, well done. He's become a force for Concordia.
Yeah.
6'6", and he's really improved his offensive game, no doubt. Locker room chats for today.
Yeah, today we'll talk with the head coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas, beginning around 5:10 to 5:15, and then we'll roll into our, once that's done, here on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com, we roll into our pregame coverage of Lakeside and Lincoln in Downs on Katy Country 94. So we'll have pregame around 5:50 shortly after that, whenever those locker room chats get finished, and we can get on with pregame for Lincoln at Lakeside on Katy Country 94. And also tonight on Z96.3 The Lake, and online video at NCKSSports.com. It's Sacred Heart at Beloit. So it's a look at the schedule as far as our stations are concerned here this evening. There are three other games I'll tell you about real quick that are going on in the area here tonight. St. John's Tipton's at Pike Valley, Rock Hills at Wilson, the Northern Plains League. And also Thunder Ridge has boiler issues. They were supposed to host Hill City tonight. They are now going to Hill City because they don't have heat in the Thunder Ridge High School. So it's Thunder Ridge at Hill City. And it would not be good to try to play those games with no heater at Thunder Ridge. So they're moving those games to Hill City tonight. Same times, JV stuff will start at 4, and then they'll roll through all that.
Never has there been a high school sports season with more options of being canceled or postponed.
Yeah.
I mean, boiler issues,
things,
ice, yeah. Snow, COVID, quarantines, player turns his ankle day of the game, don't have players. I mean, we've set a record for reasons for cancellations and postponements or changes this year, no doubt about it. Substate Wrestling Reports coming up on Saturday at 12:30. It'll be our first report. They start at noon. We'll preview that tomorrow. Dusty will have that on sports and also on the sports ticket as we look forward to Substate Wrestling coming up Saturday. Our area wrestlers will be in Minneapolis beginning at noon. All right, as Dusty mentioned, we have Lakeside and Lincoln tonight from Downs. Dusty will have the call for you. And Travis Eberle, head coach of the Lakeside Girls, gives us a scouting report on Lincoln.
Steve does a good job with them. I mean, they play man, and I always watch some film on them. You know, they've had games they've struggled, you know, to put the ball in the basket, too. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I don't want to get overconfident because some of the games I don't want how I've wanted lately. But, you know, I think if we come out and do our job, it's probably going to be a good game. But, I feel like we have the athletic ability to come out on top.
All right, so Lincoln Lakeside Girls tonight in Downs. And that'll be around 6 o'clock here this evening. And the boys' game, the nightcap, about 7:30. Lakeside hosting Lincoln and head coach Drew Dusky. Lincoln is a team that is not a pushover.
I think their record is a lot worse than the actual team they are. You know, they've got good athletes. And any time, whether it's been home or away, you know, in the past few years, they've always played us a good game. And you know, we got to come out ready to play. You know, being off for so long and not playing for so long, it's kind of like we're starting over again. So, you know, we definitely got to come out and be physical and want to rebound and bang on the boards and be aggressive.
Lincoln at Lakeside tonight on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. On Z96.3 The Lake this evening, it is Sacred Heart at Beloit. Also, all of the JV and C team games and varsity games video streamed at nckssports.com, available at Trojan Channel. Pregame around 5:50 tonight on Z96.3 Lake and katycountry94.com. Don't forget to download the Katy Country 94 and Z96.3 Lake apps on your smartphones and mobile devices so you can listen to us wherever you may be across the world. And so this is a rematch from the boys' side. It's the first meeting of the year on the girls' side. Let's explain that for a moment. 2 weeks ago, Beloit was at Sacred Heart, but the girls at Sacred Heart were in quarantine, so thus it was just boys' games only. That game, Beloit at Sacred Heart on the girls' side, does not look like it'll be made up. So Beloit and Sacred Heart will only play once at the varsity level in girls' play this year. Sacred Heart comes in a record of 8-6, and Beloit comes in a record of 2-9. Sean Remus, thoughts on meeting the Knights for the first time tonight? And Beloit's had their number. They've won 13 in a row in girls basketball against Sacred Heart, but Sacred Heart will be the favorite tonight.
You know, Sacred Heart, they've got some experience coming back. They've got some guards that have been there for quite a while, and they like to penetrate, and they're pretty good shooters from the outside, so we're definitely going to have to keep people in front of us and find ways to rebound, and then we just need to find ways to score. You know, it's been our catalyst the entire year is taking care of the ball and scoring on our end, and those are really things that we're going to have to focus on.
So Sacred Heart Beloit girls at 6 o'clock tonight on Z96.3 Lake, followed by the boys game, which was a blowout 2 weeks ago in Salina. Sacred Heart really rolling. Their defense has been outstanding, only giving up 29 points a game over the last four. They're ranked 7th in the state in 2A. Sacred Heart comes in 11-3. They may be the team to beat in the league here at Race as we wind down. And it was 62-27 was the final 2 weeks ago. They're in Salina. They're big. They're physical. They're very good defensively. And Ryan Eilert, head coach of the Beloit Trojans, his team coming in with a record of 4-10. Two key areas tonight against the Knights.
We're going to have to take care of the ball, and that's easier said than done. Their pressure defense and trapping, and they rotate really well. And the first game, the turnovers really bothered us. And just, you know, like before, the rebounding. We've got to take care of the ball, and we've got to rebound better if we want to be able to compete.
That has been a problem for Beloit. Their first shot defense many times isn't too bad, but then they don't get the rebound. And next thing you know, you're playing defense another possession. And then they have some breakdowns defensively, and then the turnovers. Sacred Heart is very aggressive defensively, although there are opportunities if you can break their pressure. So Beloit, Sacred Heart tonight. Beloit will be a considerable underdog in that boys' contest this evening. Both games on Z96.3 The Lake. All right, KU and K-State last night. It was KU winning 59-41. This was not a game you really needed to watch in the first half. The game was set back a few years. Marcus Garrett led the way with 14 points. Jalen Wilson, 11 points, 9 rebounds. KU and K-State didn't make a three-pointer in the first half. They combined to shoot 7 of 40. KU was 4 of 16 from 3. They shot 46% from the floor, which is okay. K-State was an abysmal 31% from the floor and 3 of 24 from 3, and that's only because they hit two threes in the final minute to get them past 40 points for the game. Because when KU pulled their starters, K-State pulled their starters, K-State had 35 points. They end up with 41. Believe it or not, K-State out-rebounded Kansas by 1, but not that it mattered. And K-State had 18 turnovers. KU had 16, but KU got more points off those turnovers. With 29 to K-State's 11. That was a big key in this game, as K-State made some really bad passes, especially in the second half. And it was ugly there for a while, no doubt. Mike McGurl went 1 of 11, 0 for 6 from 3. Selton Miguel was 0 for 5. Nigel Pack was 3 for 10, 0 for 7 from 3. The only guy that shot the ball well was DeJuan Gordon, 6 of 13, but he was 0 for 4 from 3. It was just a bad, bad night for K-State. Bill Self, pleased with the performance, as ugly as it might have looked.
I thought we guarded well. You know, they missed some open looks. Let's not get too carried away. But, you know, they had 35 with 1 minute left. We didn't guard them the last minute. But I was pleased. We labored offensively. We got a lot of good looks. We didn't make them. You know, we did some good things where I think we're getting better. And certainly it was nice to see our bench have a big game. I thought Bryce and Juan and Mitch, too. I thought Mitch had a great game, just didn't really rebound it great. But I thought they all played very well and all were very important in us getting this road win.
KU never trailed in the ball game. Bruce Weber, hey, you know, had good looks, just didn't knock them down.
They kept battling and battling. And, you know, it's pretty simple. You go 0 for 19 from 3 before you hit one. I thought we had some of the most open shots we've had maybe all year. And we couldn't make them. And then the points off turnovers, obviously, 18 turnovers, you know, and they're good defensively.
So K-State lose their 13th in a row, 5-18, 1-13 in the Big 12, and KU now with 10 conference wins. They've done that now 27 years in a row. KU's had 10 or more conference wins. That's insane. 27 years in a row, longest streak in the country with 10 or more wins in conference play, as KU's now 10-5 in conference play and 16-7 overall. And KU's got a tough stretch coming up, which we'll discuss with Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks. Anything you want to add about that game last night? I mean, to me, it was pretty simple. K-State had an opportunity to win. They did. They absolutely had a chance to win that game last night, and they just simply could not make shots. Brick after brick, and then the really bad turnovers, easy points the other way for KU. And if you're in a low-scoring defensive battle, you can't afford to have those live ball turnovers that result in easy points, and KU was able to do that, especially in the second half, and pull away.
Yeah, as you talk about yesterday, how knowledgeable Bill Self is, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that first question in that press conference, you could hear him in that quote there. He's like, let's not get carried away.
Yeah, right.
Like, they're like, yeah, you would have had the best defensive performance in your Big 12 career. They had 36 points, and it was 39 was the record that you had held the team to.
Right.
And it's like, let's not get carried away. And I was kind of the same. This guy was like, man, acting like KU played all-world defense last night. And I'm like,
I mean, I played good, but
No, I'm not saying they didn't play good defense. But I mean, obviously the turnovers and then points off turnovers can show you part of that. But it's like, I mean, how many wide open shots do you just not make? And it's like, wow, man. It's what's insane to me is two games against KU's worst team in a long time. Yeah. And you got blown out of the building in both of them.
I don't think they led. Did they lead in either game?
Not a single minute. They were tied at two last night.
That was it.
They never led. The 80 minutes of basketball.
They never led.
Never led against one of the worst teams KU's had in a long time.
No doubt.
And there's no, I mean, there's no disputing that.
No.
And K-State's just, no, we're good. We're going to be even way worse than that and lose our 13th in a row here.
First KU team in 12 years to not be ranked.
Yeah.
For 1 week, now they're back in. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the worst kid. It's the worst team Kansas has had in at least 12 years, no doubt. And you never did lead in any one of those games.
I mean,
games.
It wasn't even close.
No, it really wasn't. K-State just could not shoot the ball last night. It's as simple as that. No need to spend any more time on that one. KU wins 59-41. I was tuned into the women's match at the Australian Open, Serena Williams versus Naomi Osaka. And it was very interesting. My oldest, who's a freshman in high school, he's not a big tennis fan per se, but he's has some knowledge of it. And right away, I had it on, and he goes, "I'm cheering for Osaka," and I said, "Me too." And he goes, "I hope she crushes Serena," and I said, "Me too." And you may say, "Well, Serena's American. How un-American are you, Wade, and your son? And Naomi Osaka is Japan. Which what's the point of putting the countries up anymore? She lives in L.A. She's a U.S. citizen. It's like." But anyway, Naomi Osaka is a pleasant, very nice person. Serena Williams has a legacy, and she's a super tough competitor, no doubt, and I respect what she's done. It's amazing how good she's been for so long. But we talked about it when she had her meltdown in 2018 that robbed Naomi Osaka of the joy of winning the U.S. Open in her first major title. And believe it or not, what made it worse was for Naomi, her role model growing up was Serena Williams. So I still hold that against Serena, and I would bet internally Naomi maybe does. Maybe not. Maybe she's more forgivable than I am. I don't know. She handles it all the right way. She answers the questions perfectly, does Naomi Osaka. She's just sweet and innocent kid, it seems like, although she's not really a kid anymore. She's, you know, a little bit older now. And she beat Serena at her own game. It's power tennis last night. Serena looked her age against Naomi. Naomi looks like the younger one. And Naomi Osaka was down 2-0, and then she rolled, won the next six games, and then was leading the second set, and then had one loose game where she had three double faults, and then Serena turned around and lost her game on serve at love, and Naomi won in straight sets. And I agree with my son. I was hoping Osaka would crush her. And it's because Serena, I hear, you know, this is an amazing thing. I don't understand why Serena gets a pass. All right? I do wonder. It seems like she gets a pass from a lot of people. Like, she has had meltdowns before at the U.S. Open. So it's not like that was an isolated incident. It was not. And she makes it out to be bigger than what it was and the excuses she came up with and then made it a man versus woman thing, which I don't think that had anything to do with her match because she was playing poorly and that's why she lost her cool. She's an ultra-fiery competitor. I get that. I have no problem with that part. But last night during the, I don't know if you caught this comment, but I think it was Chris Fowler brought it up or something about in the match when she's losing, about Serena playing Naomi, and that playing Naomi may remind her of the 2018 U.S. Open, and that there's still some trauma for Serena since that. Did you hear that line?
I did.
That is one of the worst lines I've ever heard. That is so bogus. You know who should be having their traumatic experience? The person was robbed of the joy of winning the U.S. Open, and that would be the person across the net.
Yeah.
Oh, like, don't give me a break. Yeah, it's like, I feel sorry. This is like somebody banging their head against the wall. I mean, literally, 10 times in a row. Oh, I feel for the trauma the wall has caused that child. But no, that person did it. That person took their choice and banged their head against the wall. That's why their head hurts.
Yes.
Yeah, do you feel sorry for them? I don't know if I do, but I might feel sorry for the wall. But it's like, hello, you did it to yourself is my point. Serena Williams did that to herself in 2018. She had the meltdown. She knew she was getting her butt kicked. It was a way to distract from her getting her butt kicked.
Yeah.
And last night, she tried to hold it all in and then eventually lost. Kind of started to get, you know, said a few words and this and that on to herself. And everything went fine. And when she walked off the court, I think, and this is what I thought when I was watching this match, Serena, and I said this last year, Serena will not win another major. The only way she's going to win another major is she gets a round where she doesn't have to play. So there's like a default for somebody. Mm-hmm. So it saves her a match, wear and tear on her body. And she's got to hope that the young really good players coming up, including the person that's already one of the best in the world, if not the best, Naomi Osaka, got to hope they get upset.
Yeah.
Because Serena still plays a high level, don't get me wrong. She made the semis of the Australian Open. But when she gets to this level now at her age, she can't go all the way. And it is hard to win seven matches during a tournament, like Chris Everett said. That is true. But it's hard for anybody to win seven matches.
Yeah.
But it is harder when you're older, as Serena is. And I do applaud Serena for still making the Australian Open semifinals at her age. But last night, she was exposed like she was in 2018. Naomi Osaka is just as powerful as Serena. She's more cool and collected and calmer, has more poise. She has more dignity and grace. And she kicks Serena's butt again. And I'm all for it.
100% all for it. I said that last night. I was like, I hope I get a good match after watching this terrible basketball game. And then Naomi just rolls right through it, basically. I mean, she, you know, everybody has their down points, but
sure,
she was in control of that match most of the way outside of getting broken right away and then recovering right away from that. And then, yeah, it's fun to watch when somebody just has Serena's number because of what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like,
but she gets a free pass.
Don't
you think the media gives her a free pass? Are they intimidated by her?
We grew up in a time where people didn't get free passes, right? Like, and I was a little past when John McEnroe was obviously in his prime, but that dude never got a free pass.
No, he didn't.
Like, and Jimmy Connors never got free passes from anybody, right? I mean, I'm just like, I'm watching this, and even Novak gets a free pass sometimes, you know, on the men's side. It's like people are too nice to these players.
On the tennis side.
In tennis.
In regular sports, we rip Mahomes for losing a Super Bowl because he's missing four offensive linemen, and he loses to the GOAT. And Brady's not ripped for losing to Nick Foles, but Mahomes is ripped for losing to the GOAT.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my respect for Serena was gone way before that happened.
Oh, I agree.
Told the chair umpire take a ball and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Threaten violence.
Probably knows what that is. But it's, I just like, I don't understand it. But it is. And then at the end, it's like they're talking about, oh, Serena might be done here and this. And
like, so.
And it's like, well, yeah, she's done. I don't know if she's done at Australia, but she's done winning majors, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Unless something crazy happens, some, you know, COVID, something says that people can't come to this tournament and she's going to still go.
Right.
And, like, Osaka's not there. And
the field's got to be depleted.
Party's not there. Right. Nobody's there anymore.
Yeah.
And so, but, yeah, I enjoyed that.
I did, too.
Quite immensely last night.
I did, too. And I love that Naomi.
And I love Naomi Osaka anyway. I cheer for her no matter who she's playing.
I hear the stuff about how, I've heard this before about Serena being a class act. I'm like, class acts don't have temper tantrums like Serena did. If you think she's a class act, then you must have thought John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors are class acts, and they weren't.
Yeah.
Naomi Osaka is a class act.
She's a saint if Serena's a class act.
Oh, goodness gracious, yeah. Osaka's only 23, and Serena's 39, so 16. I mean, Serena's old enough to be her mother. And that's kind of how it looked last night, is that Serena had her moments, but she can't compete against the younger great players, and that happens. No knock on Serena there.
No.
That's called father time. I mean, and, you know, Brady can be helped out being a 43-year-old quarterback and throw some interceptions in games and win playoff games because he's got a great team around him. In tennis, when you're a singles player, it father time and you and the opponent. And there is no somebody to, you know, you can't rely on your doubles partner to bail you out when you're not playing well at 39. No, you're playing singles.
Yeah.
So Osaka's in the final against Brady from the U.S. They played in the semis in the U.S. Open a couple years ago that same year, and Osaka won in three sets. So it could be a good women's final. And then Nadal got knocked off yesterday. He won the first two, lost the last three. You never seen Nadal lose a two-set-to-none lead.
That's crazy.
He lost in five. So what do we got now?
Djokovic won already today.
So he's in the final?
Yeah, he's into the final. And then Medvedev and Tsitsipas, who beat Nadal, will play in the other semifinal. It's early tomorrow morning. So
as long as Djokovic doesn't, you know, hit a ball at a line judge, he might have a chance of not being DQ'd, and he could win another major. All right, baseball news. Tim Tebow's retired. Do you care?
I mean, he never made it to where I wanted.
I kind of wanted him to make it. I mean, he's a good dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's retiring from baseball. But, you know, he did maybe better than some people thought. And the Padres just have a lot of money to give away. I would like to get in line. Fernando Tatis Jr., who, by the way, is a stud. He's only 22, and the White Sox traded him away for guess who? You remember who the White Sox traded Fernando Tatis to the Padres for?
No, it was Shield, wasn't it?
James Shields. Yeah. Yes, that was a great. That was one of the worst trades of all time.
Yeah.
So far. 14-year, $340 million deal, which what's that come out to? Like $24
million,
I think?
That's $24.3 million a year.
Honestly, this is a good deal for the Padres because I've talked about these long-term deals, and my son and I were talking about this last night. And my son goes, you should never have a longer than a five-year deal. And I'm like, you know what? I agree with you because really, if you look at any 7 to 10 year deal, they don't end well. And I'm talking more of the guaranteed contracts with baseball, okay? Because you know, Mahomes to me was a smart contract with the Chiefs. Now, why would that be a smarter contract than baseball's contracts? Because baseball contracts are fully guaranteed. Fernando Tatis can blow out his leg tomorrow, blow out his knee. He still gets $340 million over 14 years. It's a guaranteed contract in baseball. In football, Mahomes, first of all, there's insurance on all these contracts, by the way, no matter what the sport is. But also in football, you can get out of a contract. Obviously, Mahomes blows out his knee tomorrow. Next thing you know, he can't play anymore. The Chiefs will be they won't have to pay the full $503 million on that contract.
Yeah.
So it's different. You're not comparing apples to apples here. But if there's ever a time to sign a guy to a long-term deal, to me it is when you already have established in a year or two that you're a star, and that's what Tatis is, and he's only 22. I don't understand the 7-year deal for Albert Pujols at the age of 40. No. Or what 35, sorry.
Yeah.
I don't understand long-term deals for Josh Hamilton when he was 31. I don't understand long-term deals for guys that are in their 30s, but I do understand long-term deals for guys like Tatis at the age of 22. Imagine if the Royals would have done this with Carlos Beltran.
Yeah.
But they didn't.
No.
And maybe Beltran would have. Maybe they tried. They didn't have the resource.
Money
right.
Now,
and Beltran wouldn't have maybe signed it anyway.
Similar.
Right. I mean, Tatis is giving up money. If he continues to be a really good player, he's giving up money down the line, although they could redo some kind of extension pay, possibly.
Yeah.
But it's a full no-trade clause for 14 years. And the last 143 games, he has 39 homers, 27 stolen bases, hitting .301. He's a good defensive shortstop as well. And, he's only 22. He's locked in until he's 36 now. Now, that does seem like way too long of a deal even for a 22-year-old. But to me, I have no problem giving a guy a 7, 8, 9, 10-year deal at the age of 22 compared to all these other guys getting these long contracts when they're too old.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't usually work out very well. So a lot of money. Padres spent a lot of money. Manchado, Hosmer, Tatis. I know they pitching-wise. Who'd they get here recently?
Snell
in the trade. They picked up somebody else, spent a lot of money. I forget who it was.
Darvish.
Darvish, yeah. They've been spending all kinds of money.
Yeah.
So apparently money does grow on trees in San Diego. Who knew? Fake or real.